Hey everybody, welcome to the big episode 25 of Gamer Heroes. I am Derek, I got John with me.
Yo, what's up? Welcome back.
25 episodes, man.
You made it.
It's exciting.
25 is it's a big deal. It's a special anniversary for some people out there.
I mean, it's kind of exciting. So this is now my third podcast that's hit at least 25 episodes.
That's insane.
Which is cool, and it's a good feeling, but, you know, we're still kind of early on compared to our sister show, Screen Heroes. They hit episode 76 this week, so
a little behind. I thought it was more than that.
No, 76 episodes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I feel like that's a lot. I feel like...
I mean, it's a lot. I just felt like it was more.
All right. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know. But yeah. So anyway, what are we talking about? We have some news that we're going to cover. We'll cover some news.
Yeah.
And then our main topic is local co-op gaming. Basically, the state of it, where it came from, how it has been, where it's going, what our feelings are about that.
Yeah.
Because we have those.
That's what this podcast is about, feelings, right?
It's about feelings.
It's the I feels.
But we are going to start with some news first. So first off, Atari. So back before E3, when we did our predictions, I predicted that Sega was going to announce that they're returning to the console game in a legitimate way. I know they have the little retro one with the built-in games and all that.
They're working on it.
But like an actual modern-day console. And... you know, some people thought I was kind of crazy and that was really silly. Well, here's the amazing part. I was barely wrong because it's not Sega. It's Atari.
Atari. Yeah.
So, you know.
Which is even more left field.
Only a little bit off. But yeah, so they're calling it the Atari box. They released a bunch of photos of what the console looks like. I actually think it's beautiful. I think it's a really sleek, beautiful design. Very retro. It looks like something that you would have seen in an 80s house.
Oh, yeah. We were just talking about it before we started the podcast stream here. From a front view, you're like, oh, that kind of looks like a PS2.
A little bit.
And then when you look at it in a top view, you're like, you can see the triangle pyramid type thing. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, that's totally Atari. That's old school right there.
A lot of love went into this design. The people who actually came up with the aesthetic, you could tell that they wanted it to be pure Atari. And what's interesting about this is that this is a legitimate modern-day console. It has HDMI, SD card support, four USB ports. This is modern. This is a completely modern console. But at the same time, they're essentially going to include their own virtual console of their back catalog.
And they're telling this up front, which I think is awesome.
Which, I mean, I don't know if they're doing that intentionally to give a little bite at Nintendo, or if they're just excited about it. I love that they're doing this. I mean, Atari has, and if people don't realize, they've still been making games long since they've left the console industry. So there's a lot of games out there that are Atari games that people love. I mean, one of my personal favorites is Roller Coaster Tycoon from this century, more modern games. But obviously, you can go all the way back to some real
Pong,
classics.
Yeah.
Pong, Galaga, you know, Asteroids.
Yeah.
You know, the real staples of where video games came from. And it's going to come in two flavors. There's going to be a black one and then like a wood.
Which I thought was really interesting.
If I can get my hands on the wood one, I am buying the wood
one. So here's my question. Is it like fake, like synthetic wood? Or is this like, we're talking like legitimate wood? Or is this just like a skin?
I assume it's going to be wood like if you get the wood trim in a car.
Right, right.
That's what I'm anticipating.
It's like plastic with...
Yeah, like it's wood-ish. You know? It's wood-like.
I mean, if you're talking about retro, though, like that, I think that's as retro as it gets. We're talking going back to, like, Jesus Christ time. Who made this out of wood?
It looks really cool, though, and I love that they have this kind of wood design, because the wood edition is super retro, because think about back in the 80s, and even in the 70s, when you had your home TVs, they were basically pieces of furniture inside these giant wooden cabinets.
Exactly. Or the TVs were made out of wood. Do you remember the tubes had like a wood framing around it? Yeah.
And, you know, to kind of see that aesthetic return with a classic console like this coming back is a really big deal. Now, for those of you who want the sleekest, newest-looking thing, the black-red edition will also be available and probably easier to get, I would imagine. And, I mean, we don't really know a whole lot outside of that. They say it's going to have modern internal specs. I'm assuming that as well because of the HDMI, USB, and SD support.
I mean, but they could just turn around and do, like a new SNES mini type
thing. The classic.
Because it's still supporting HDMI and 1080p output, but
yeah,
it's not quite developed for new. So I'm hoping they don't do that. I'm hoping they don't do that because that'd be very disappointing to... They have held off on specs, and I think that there's a good reason for that. They're not quite ready to tell us that. They actually gave us a lot of information in that last break, I guess I should say.
Yeah. I think what's going to be really telling here is, who are they going to compete with? Are they going to be competing with Nintendo as far as specs are concerned? Or are they going to be competing with Sony and Microsoft? Because as much as everybody who listens to this podcast knows, I'm obsessed with my Switch and absolutely love it. You'd be out of your mind to claim that it can compete on a hardware level with the PlayStation 4 exactly. and the Xbox One.
And it would cost, you know what I mean? It'd have to cost a lot.
Yeah.
That's just how that goes.
So
it sounds to me like Switch is the main competitor here.
I would think so, but there were also some grumblings early on that this is going to be a PC-style console. And if that's true, if the guts are PC guts, that sounds a lot more like the Xbox than it does the Switch.
So, well, let me throw a wrench into your argument there.
Okay.
What if they end up doing something like the Steam Shield or something like that?
The Steam Box?
Yes, thank you.
I expect it to be similar, except Atari, right? So the big difference there is going to be the Steam Box is just Steam games, which are essentially PC games.
Yeah, but it's basically just a streamer to your console. You have which to. It's kind of silly.
It is.
$400 or $300 to stream.
This is dedicated though, so this is going to be.
Yeah.
You have the games on the console. Now I'm looking at the images here. I don't see a place to put in a disc.
Yep.
Or anything like that. You know, it's got Ethernet on the back. I'm assuming it'll have a wireless option too, of course. But I don't see any type of slot for games. Now, maybe it's just the images because these are concept designs or something like that. But is it possible that this will be the world's first all-digital home console?
You know, that's... For me, personally, that would be a bold move, but a bad idea. People are attached to the game. They want a physical game. And you also, when you're talking about building a console like this, you probably want to build bridges with the people who are selling your game,
yeah.
your console. So you probably want to keep them in business by selling physical games that they can sell as well. So I feel like we just can't see it. Maybe that triangle, the dome, like lifts up.
like an
Maybe
old
it
DVD
levitates.
Player, you know?
No, I really do think that the dome, thinking about it more, lifts up slightly and you just insert the disc. Who knows if it's even a disc?
I mean, you make a good point, right? The Switch has cartridges, so maybe it's going to do... Maybe that's how that runs.
How cool would it be if the games came on a USB drive or something?
Well, and it has four USB ports, which seems like a lot, but maybe that's for wired controllers?
See, that's the part that I'm throwing off. No other system has four.
Nobody has four. You know, the PlayStation and the Xbox have two. Each, right?
Yeah.
The Switch has one in the dock. And not
yeah,
even,
I was
going to
say,
even,
like, not
on
the dock.
It has USB-C on the bottom. But what's interesting, so to your point, I don't want to see it go all digital because of the lack of physical games. I don't want to see that because the hard drive space isn't going to be there for
too.
It.
Yeah, that's an even better point.
Because if you look at this current generation of consoles, the PS4 and the Xbox One both launched with 500 gig hard drives. They're both now up to a terabyte.
Which is insane that we need that.
But when a game like Halo 5 is over 50 gigs.
Exactly.
You know, these games are massive. Some of the newer games are even 60. They're pushing 60. So that means that on launch, when the Halo 5 came out, that game took up 10% of the Xbox's hard drive.
Isn't that insane?
Not including the OS in there too. So it started to limit people, and then they, of course, expanded it to a terabyte. The Switch, on the other hand, only has 32 gigs. So most of my titles are cartridges on the Switch.
Which would be a smart investment.
Because I just don't want to worry about it when there's when there's a digital-only title, I want to have the room for it.
Absolutely.
But for the Atari box, if they're going with a PC-like structure, maybe it'll have a terabyte to start. Maybe it'll have a swappable hard drive. Maybe it'll have some type of cloud storage system, because the classic games are going to be so small. I mean, you know, there's this image floating around the internet of the very first screenshot of Super Mario Brothers, and the picture, the JPEG, takes up more space and memory than the entire original game did. So these are tiny games that we're talking about. Yeah. If you go back far enough. If this comes out with a terabyte hard drive, you're going to need some serious RAM to go along with that. So is this going to be an 8 gig RAM system?
But again, a 12 gig about RAM price.
System like the Scorpio? Because now you're pushing the $400 price range.
Where are we? Yeah, exactly. Then actually, when they release the specs, we will know where they stand.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Because that's where you're figuring out, like, who's your target and who are we battling? And you push those kind of specs, you're going up against the giants. You're going up against Xbox and so and PlayStation.
That will be really telling. So we don't know yet. We'll let you guys know when we do. I do think that the timing is perfect with the new Blade Runner movie. They have the giant Atari symbol in there too. And
I probably don't think there will probably be a cameo minus
of an Atari sitting on in Harrison Ford's absolutely little alcove place. No, that'd be funny.
Yeah.
Maybe there will be a Blade Runner 2049 edition of the Atari box with Harrison Ford's face on it.
Oh my god. I would totally buy that. And then there's like they release a Grand Theft Auto, but instead it's like Blade Runner.
Yes.
Grand Theft Auto version. How
I like
awesome
it.
Would that be?
I like it.
Yeah, right? And you get to play Ryan Gosling. That would be pretty awesome.
I'm pretty
good. Or Harrison
with that.
Ford.
I would totally play that game.
Yeah.
I mean, think of GTA 6, Replicant.
Oh, I'll take it.
Yeah, all right, well, I think that's it for the Atari. So, John, why don't you tell us about what's going on in the world of Sony?
Well, Sony is getting ready to release one of their newest updates. This is supposed to be the big one, is what they call it. It's 5.0. And basically, they haven't given us any details as to what they're planning on doing, but they're opening up a sign-on beta. They're basically asking people, can you test this for us? We need feedback. So it kind of scares me. I'm kind of worried as to how big is this update and, you know, why is it so big that we need people to test it? Because I felt in the past they've just kind of internally tested and rolled it out. And all of a sudden now we're like, we need people to test this. So there are a couple clues that lead us to believe that they're working on some kind of new interface with the PlayStation Now, because they're actually not directly requiring a PlayStation Now, and that's the subscription service that allows you to play older games, kind of like what Xbox is doing. They're not coming out directly and saying
you mean PS Plus, right? Is that what you're talking about?
No, PlayStation Now.
Okay.
PS Now is what it's called. Plus is the subscription for
just the online
plan. Exactly. Yeah. Gotcha. PS Now is a separate thing, but they're not directly saying it's required, but they're definitely saying you should have it. So we're kind of curious as to know what they're planning here.
I wonder if they're launching, because Microsoft has had this for a long time now. Mm-hmm. They have a preview program, and if you're part of the preview program, you do get access to Xbox updates before everybody else. So, for example, when they were launching this, Microsoft has their new kind of streaming service,
mm-hmm.
Xbox Unlimited or whatever it's called. You got access to that early if you were a preview member. The backwards compatibility for the 360 came to preview members first. So maybe that's what they're doing here, is they're basically creating a PS4 preview. And if you want to sign up for it, you can. And if you don't, you don't have to. I like it because I enjoy doing things in beta. You know, I like being able to test it and see how things began and then see where they end up. You know,
right.
For example, I started playing Star Trek Online, which is the MMO for Star Trek, back during its original beta. and to see, to log in today and see what the game looks like today, I mean, it's a totally different world. It's changed so much over the years. So it's kind of cool to see it's where it came from. At the same time, you get early access to features, and if they're cool features, you get to use them before everybody else.
Yeah.
And they're not charging for that.
They're being very quiet and hush about what the features are. We just know that their beta is closing here in the next couple weeks. So it's nothing crazy to be alarmed about. No crazy news other than that they're getting ready to launch a big update. So if you're a PS4 owner, get ready to do a huge update. I hope it's interface. I like the interface, but it could use an update. I would like some new social media features. I'd like some new features for chatting. So we'll see how that works.
I like the simplicity of the UI, so I hope they don't try and muddy it up a bit.
No, just quick widgets. I would like widgets, personally. I think I know that's more PC-like.
Yeah.
But it's very nice. They're already doing this. Do you stream Hulu on your PlayStation, right?
No, I do it on the Xbox.
So on the Xbox, when you're watching some of your shows, does it sometimes ask you, press X or A right now to be directly sent to this link?
It does, yes.
So in my opinion, like, it's kind of already giving you like a, so it's like a direct link, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a direct advertisement.
It's supposed to be kind of an interactive ad, and the idea being that if you like that or you're interested in it, you can immediately learn more, which from an advertising perspective and marketing is very smart.
It's cool.
I like that. I do like that Hulu lets you sometimes pick between ads or styles of ads. I do appreciate that. But
yes,
the reason that I prefer playing games on my PS4 to games on my Xbox is because the PlayStation 4 is so well streamlined for gaming. I don't want them to muddy that up the way the Xbox is. The Xbox is a great entertainment machine.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the best gaming machine.
I can understand that.
And it's because of all the overhead. I mean, it's running Windows 10. You've got a million apps that are on it. And while a lot of those apps are available on the PlayStation, it's all still much better streamlined UI than the Xbox. There's just a lot of overhead. And that's also where the Switch succeeds. It's an incredibly streamlined UI. It's very simple.
Basic.
I'd like a little more there.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's a little too basic.
It's a little too basic. You know, you gotta kind of, and I think the PlayStation finds that nice medium for a gaming rig.
Yeah. I'm just really curious to know what's so big that we need people to test it.
Well, I mean, they did it for the 4.5 update, so it's not, like, totally unprecedented.
The fact that they called this the big one.
Yeah, well, I mean, so for those unfamiliar with software versioning, you know, you look at something like, oh, Windows 10 and Windows 10, but if you remember back to Windows 8 and then there was 8.1, well, every decimal place that you, every decimal number that you add decreases the significance of that particular release. So if you have a product that's, say, version 9.8.7, 0.63 is a minor upgrade.
Right.
Right. But when you move to version 10, that's considered a massive version change. So, you know, version 4.5 was not as big of a jump, but 5.0 is considered a massive version change. So in the software world, that should mean some significant feature differences.
Right.
Whatever those are.
It's a large leap.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Good. That's what we have really to look forward to from
from
PlayStation currently, Sony.
For those of you who haven't spun up your Wii U in a while because you've been playing the Switch, there was actually a software update for the Wii U this past week. First one in 18 months, 16 months, over a year. It had been over a year since the Wii U received a software update. So it's just stability thing. So if you still play your Wii U, I would take it because it's just going to make it a smoother experience.
You know, they're still developing games. And there's a couple said they were going to stop.
Well, third-party games. Nintendo has stopped.
Yeah,
Nintendo
right,
is
right.
done.
No, you're totally right.
But, I mean, dude, Just Dance...
Yeah,
is putting out a Wii title. See, not Wii U, a Wii title.
Just Dance, number one, I don't play those games, but number two, these games keep coming out, like, all the time.
Every
like,
year
even for PlayStation 3, I think there's a
Just Dance every year, but the Wii will be the oldest console getting
the game.
That's a 2006 console. So, I think, Ubisoft is creating a game for an 11-year-old console.
I think it's a terrible
I'm sure it's an incredibly simple port from the Wii U to the Wii or vice versa,
but
is probably what it is. They probably don't take advantage of the Wii U
components. The cost to manufacture those discs is just silly.
I can't imagine it's super expensive, but...
Yeah, but you're banking on making sales.
Hey, I guess people are still buying them. There's a lot of people out there that had the Wii. The Wii was an incredibly successful console. The Wii U was not. So until the Switch really takes over... once they can meet with demand as far as production is concerned, the Wii's still gonna have people playing it, I think. Especially without the Virtual Console being on the Switch.
This just in, will Nintendo ever create enough Switches for people to buy?
Yeah! In like a year and a half.
Right? It's like you should have known, guys, when your pre-order sold out in like a day.
Should have
known.
Well, they immediately tried to double production. So they're working on it, but the thing is that the Switch stands to sell more in its first fiscal year than the Wii U in its entire lifetime.
That's insane.
So,
that's
insane. Something to consider. It's not an easy thing for them. And they're still putting out the SNES Classic, which, of course, takes factories to build as well. They filed a new trademark that has people thinking there's going to be an N64 Classic, which...
If this is the one thing that I have a problem with these classics, please have a cartridge slot.
But that's the point, is they don't...
That's
not what these are.
But if you did that like Sega did,
yeah,
you would have more money.
And okay,
so Retro Duos are now capitalizing on the cartridge thing because they don't offer
it. But this is Nintendo being Nintendo. I mean, we can segue this into the Splatoon conversation, too. You can say, but look, Sega did. The thing is, though, Sega works much more like a normal company. And Nintendo doesn't. Nintendo has survived by being weird.
Yeah.
That's the truth. It's the honest truth. Love it, hate it, somewhere in between. Nintendo still exists today, and the Switch exists today because they do whatever the fuck they want.
I mean, you're right. They definitely do the weird, like, for any of you that watch the Switch reveal,
right?
They come out on stage yelling and antics and all sorts of crazy stuff.
They're very different. And you know, there are some cultural differences, of course, because they're handling this completely out of Japan.
Right.
Right? And then they pass stuff off to Nintendo of America, Nintendo Europe, and so forth. But, you know, Microsoft and Sony have taken things much more seriously than Nintendo ever has. Nintendo's always been, games are supposed to be fun, supposed to be a toy. And Microsoft and Sony are trying to compete for the next Call of Duty. And it's a different strategy.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes you get the successes like the Wii and the Switch. Other times you get a Wii U. Or in this case, the fucking communication system set up for the Switch. And let's talk about that just for a second because I want to vent. So, Splatoon 2 hits the market today if you're listening to this podcast on release day. So Friday, July 21st, Splatoon 2 hits the streets.
Right.
It'll be the first game to support Nintendo's new online app, their smartphone app, that allows you to join essentially chat rooms to communicate with your friends while playing the game so you can coordinate. Now, I know what you're thinking. For like a decade, you've been able to do that from your PlayStation and from your Xbox. And you're right. But you've never been able to do that from a Nintendo console. Even on the Wii U, games that had multiplayer, like the GoldenEye game, you couldn't talk to each other. So this is the first time Nintendo is trying to do this. And every time the internet is involved, Nintendo goes crazy and doesn't know what to do.
It's so true.
So rather than saying, well, Sony and Microsoft have built-in audio communication systems and protocols to handle that on the console. Well, we don't want to do that. Now, a lot of people are speculating, and I do agree, that they're trying to leave as much off of the Switch as possible to not push that hardware any more than the game has to. I understand that, and I do respect that. But let me just paint a picture for you. Close your eyes, all right, because this is not an easy thing to picture. So you have your Switch. And let's say it's on the dock because you're playing in your living room and you're in the United States and you sit about 9 feet away from your TV.
Where a lot of people would sit, yeah.
And you're sitting there with your Pro Controller, your Joy-Cons, and the grip. Cool. Next to you, you have your cell phone with the screen on because your phone has to be unlocked at all times for this to work. Your battery burning away as your screen is brightening up the room. Now, plugged into the phone is a... basically a splitter. Yeah. One end, which is wired, goes all the way the 9 feet back to the Nintendo Switch and plugs into the console. The other cable, also a wired cable, goes to the headset that you are wearing. And that is how you will communicate with your friends in Splatoon 2.
Too many damn cords. Going too many damn places.
It makes no sense because if you're playing it docked, it makes no sense at all. If you're playing it in handheld mode or tabletop mode, it makes more sense, but still not a lot. And the fact that you're required to use a smartphone is going to create a lot of problems, because here's a few. First off, it's going to burn the hell out of your battery, which is a problem I have anyway not doing this.
As our phones get bigger and more powerful, and the batteries don't. Yeah, exactly. They require more juice.
But Nintendo's main demographic are younger people.
Right.
And I would imagine that there are a lot of kids under the age of, say, 14 who want to be playing Splatoon 2 who do not have a cell phone of their own yet. Now, look, if you have kids out there, you're listening, and you are in that age bracket, and you have a cell phone, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. My kid would have one, too. But my point here is that most probably don't.
Right.
From a financial perspective, phones are not cheap. And a lot of families have to decide, what are we buying? And I'm sure that a lot of them want to make their kids happy and are trying their best to get a Switch, because Nintendo focuses on kids more than the PlayStation and the Xbox do.
Right.
But a lot of these kids are not going to have a phone. So they're going to have to use their parents' phone. They're going to have to use mom's phone, dad's phone, whoever's phone, uncle, aunt, whatever. You're going to have to use their phone to play this game. Well, what if they get a phone call? What if they get a text? What if they need to send an email? You know, we don't really know what this is going to be like, because the app just launched like 2 days ago, and the only game that works with it just came out. So
it will be coming out. Yeah, exactly.
So we don't really know. It's just convoluted and it's a mess. And
I think it's terrible. The fact, I don't know how the app's going to function. I assume it's going to be Bluetooth, some proprietary Bluetooth type thing.
No, it's all wired. That's the thing. The whole thing is wired. It's not communicating.
No, we could play the game. No, what I'm saying, though, is we could launch the Nintendo app tomorrow or today, if you're listening today, and we should be able to communicate through there, right? Without the headphones. My impression was that we could use the phone microphone to communicate, no?
Through the app? You might be able to, but it's only through the app. It's not through the Switch.
Exactly.
So there's no Bluetooth.
Why are we even... Well, you wouldn't have to be corded, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but if you're just, it's as if you're on speakerphone. That's all.
Exactly.
That is.
That's what I would say. Why are we doing that? Why are we turning our phones into? You're basically making a call, and what if there's no reception? Like, what do you do?
I assume you can be on Wi-Fi in that case. But the whole reason the cord is connected from the device to the Switch is so that way the in-game audio can be routed through the headset.
That's ridiculous.
Now,
and the headset looks ridiculous. If you want to ask,
it's a third party headset, so that's not on Nintendo. But the app convolution is that's all on Nintendo. But one thing I want to point out is you might be saying to yourselves, but the DualShock and the Xbox One controllers have headphone jacks built in right at the bottom of them, and you're absolutely right. But you know what doesn't have that? The Switch Pro controller and the Switch Joy-Cons. None of the Nintendo controllers have that built in, so you can't do that.
It's on the top of the Switch.
So, I don't know, but we're going to move on.
Guys,
it's just annoying.
Listen, if you're listening, drop us a comment. Let us know what you're thinking. Seriously, we'll leave the link in there for you so you can take a look at this article and tell us what you think.
It's so crazy. I pre-ordered Splatoon 2, so I will be playing it. How I'm going to communicate with my teammates, I don't know yet.
You won't be.
I'll probably get on like a Discord chat on my laptop.
I was going to say, there's probably a chat somewhere that you could use within that. But I'm very curious to see what the hell this is about tomorrow,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Because people who don't have Splatoon should still be able to download the app.
Yeah, I already downloaded it.
Oh, you've already done it.
Can't
okay.
do anything.
Right.
So that's the only thing. I thought you could... I must have misunderstood, or maybe they're releasing this later. I thought you could add friends.
Yeah, no, that was not explained properly. It made it seem like that was an option.
I think what they meant
is... I thought the same thing.
In the game, you can add friends to the chat, is I think what they meant to say. And instead, it sounded like you can just friend people from the app. and that's,
which would make sense,
which would be cool, because I mean the Xbox app does that, and the PlayStation one does that.
Well,
so.
And it's not like people don't have their own ID, so right. I don't understand it.
It's a little weird because Nintendo's late to the party, so they've seen how the other two big shots have done this for years, the last two generations, and it's gotten better from those two companies. I mean, the way it is today is better than it was 10 years ago. I'm not saying that they've been stagnant or anything, but Nintendo should have gained something from all of their work.
Absolutely.
The last piece of news I want to cover, because we have to get to our main topic,
yeah,
is a really cool thing that I found. This article is from Kotaku, so I want to give credit where credit is due. But this is really cool. There's a service called BLD. And this service is basically helping you learn what you need to build a computer for the games you want to play.
That's easy. I have a Derek. So Derek helped me build a PC, if you guys are listening from the beginning, earlier in the year. So this little service is not needed for me.
but it's a really cool idea, though. Very so, cool like, idea. Basically what this has is it's got a list of available games. Now, right now the list is kind of short, but I imagine it'll get longer. And you select a game. So, I mean, they've got a bunch of stuff on here. Tomb Raider's on here. WoW is on here. You've got Heroes of the Storm and Battlefield and Overwatch and Diablo.
Some big titles,
too. The Witcher, Fallout 4. There's some good stuff on here, right?
Yeah.
You select the game that you want to play. And then it outputs the stats you need, the type of hardware you need to play this game at the most affordable level. Not top of the line.
Yeah.
Not bottom of the line. The most affordable level. Which is really, really cool, because basically it tells you what the system requirements are, and then it gives you different budget items. So that way you can select a budget, and it'll tell you, you know, what you got to do. So I'm just gonna read a bit from this article.
Go for it.
I just think it's interesting. So
I think it's great.
The article's on Kotaku by Mike Fahey, so you can check that out there. But basically, it says here, quote, for the purpose of this article, the BLD folks gave me a coupon good for anything from the shop to be returned afterwards. So I could have gone balls out here, but balls out is boring. I wanted something more modest, something in the $1,000 price range. Boom. Here's a $1,124 system along with the estimated frame per second. Each of my chosen games will achieve a 1920 by 1080 resolution, yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, it does a really good job of showing you can select multiple games, you can select your budget, and then it'll give you what you need to do. So for people out there who may not know how to build a computer or want to learn, but there's just, you walk into Micro Centers or Tiger Direct, or you go on Newegg, and there's just a million components everywhere, and you don't know what to do, this is a great place to start, because it's going to help you build out that machine for you. And it's going to be a more unique experience. You're going to feel more connected to the computer if it's something that you've put together. And it's really neat. I mean, these things range quite a bit. By being able to put your budget in there, you can really get what you want. So I'm actually going to play around with this. Later in the year, I'm going to build a new computer. And I'm going to use this and see how it compares to what I would have done
otherwise. That's cool. I like that.
Because I'm going to do my own research first. I'm going to pick out essentially what I want, give or take. And then I'm going to do this. And I'm going to see how close they are, see if I found anything better or they did, and kind of compare it. So.
See, but like, I guess it'd be kind of like stocks and bonds, right? Is there like a modest, aggressive, and then stable?
It's more of just the price ranges.
Right. But so like, what if you're aggressive and you're like, I want the best? Like, is there a sliding bar that you're like, I want the best, and your budget's not an issue?
I don't know about that. I think it's more of a budget thing.
So if I put $5,000 in and I want to play Overwatch, which everyone knows Overwatch is very minimal.
Well, but here's the thing, though. You can play Overwatch at insanely high FPS. And
that's true.
And 4K resolution. So if you want to play Overwatch at the top of its absolute ability, yeah, you're going to have to spend a lot of money on the computer to do that. But you don't have to, because it's Overwatch. It's not. It doesn't need that, in my opinion. I know there's some people out there that the idea of playing a game under 100 frames per second is crazy.
I just want to say this. Once, there was a great article I was reading, once upon a time ago, I cared a lot about my frames per second and less about my quality of resolution. I would rather have more frames per second. Once I let go of that frames per second standard, I enjoyed my games. Guys, let the FPS go. Look, enjoy the quality of the game and the resolution that you can play at. You can see sweat on Tracer's butt if you want to. Like, I mean, or on Widowmaker's butt, whatever you want to see.
it depends on the person, right? And it depends on the hardware that you have. If you don't have a monitor that can support the high frame rates and the high resolutions, then it doesn't really matter what your PC can output.
Absolutely. Derek drilled that into my mind, and I finally let go.
That's what it comes down to. I mean, it's the truth. Yeah, okay, so you want your PS4 Pro, or you want the Scorpio. Do you have a 4K TV? Because if you don't have a 4K TV, then you're not going to get that. It's, you know, you're only going to get the 1080 that the TV can pump out. So this is the same thing. You have your budget. What do you want that budget to be? Keeping in mind, you have to have a monitor that can handle what you're going to be putting out. And if you end up buying a computer that puts out 114 frames a second and 4K or whatever, or 1440p, whatever that ends up being, can your monitor handle that? That's the question.
Yeah.
Because if you're just throwing it on a TV, then you might not. And you might be wasting some money. That's all I'm saying. So... All right, man. So let's do this. We've been BSing for like a half an hour. So talk to us about this main topic.
All right. I'll just jump in there. So we're talking about cooperative games, guys. Yeah, as you know, Switch has made a strong push towards bringing co-op back. So this topic came up is like, what happened? When did our systems lose cooperative play? And we're talking local co-op. We know online co-op exists, yada, yada, yada. We're talking local couch co-op, okay? Derek, hit them with the history.
All right, so for people who don't remember, there was once a time, many moons ago, where buying a console meant that you got two controllers in the box. This was the original Nintendo and the Super Nintendo and many of the Sega consoles as well. You would get two controllers, one for you, and one for your sibling or friend or whoever. And things were great.
This was standard.
It was standard. It was totally standard. And it was meant to be that way. That's why you had Mario and Luigi on day one. These games were meant to be a social experience. Now, there have been what can be considered cooperative or multiplayer games almost the entire history of video gaming. We can go all the way back to the original consoles, the original releases, and find games that are considered cooperative games. So if we go all the way back to as early as 1981, there was a game called Wizard of War. It was available for the Atari 8-bit and the 2600, the Commodore 64. It was in arcades, and it had a local two-player play in 1981. And of course, you know, we know as time goes on that Nintendo brought that with Mario. Mario brought the original Mario Brothers, not Super, just regular Mario Brothers, right, and Ice Climbers and things like that. Gauntlet in 1985, which was a classic title that's, you know, had several sequels over the years, continued to have that type of play. Now, what's really important, though, is when most people think co-op, they really think that you're talking about first-person shooters. That's what everybody thinks when they think.
I don't.
No? What do you think of when you say co-op?
I immediately think of platformer. Immediately. My mind goes with platformer.
So you think Mario?
No, I actually think more of like...
Contra?
Like Contra. Okay. That's exactly more like what I think. Yeah, Contra.
Contra's a great one. Contra's a great one. And that's an original Nintendo game too. Another two-player Nintendo game. I think a lot of people think first-person shooters because of the success of Halo.
Right, that is true.
So, now, there was other games.
Well, you forget, like, some GoldenEye.
Well, that did not have co-op.
I guess it wasn't campaign co-op. Yeah. So this is when we talk about the different types of cooperative.
In my opinion, co-op has to be campaign. Otherwise, it's just multiplayer.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, no, that's a good, fair
distinction. So, Mario Kart is multiplayer.
Right.
So... I do want to point out that probably the biggest game that really kicked this off would have been the original Doom. So I'm not forgetting Doom.
Yeah.
1993. It had LAN play, and it was just a really significant advancement in PC gaming. That did not transfer to consoles for a little while from that level, but the original Halo is probably what did it in for everybody, because the original Halo had local co-op. You could go through that original Halo campaign, Somebody has Master Chief and the other person has not Master Chief.
Which is weird.
Or whatever.
But as another Spartan.
As another Spartan.
Yeah.
And then other games had this too, of course. You had, Quake and Half-Life and Gears of War. And everybody really, from that I know, enjoyed that, being able to go through these campaigns together. I think if I had been able to play through the Gears of War games with somebody else, doing local co-op, that would have been a ton of fun. But I didn't. I played those alone. So over time, it was determined that in order to push the limits of our consoles, we could not do split screen anymore.
Which is frustrating.
And we lost local co-op on a lot of major titles, including Halo. And racing games, Forza 5,
right,
for example, did not have local co-op.
See, that's the fall, in my opinion. It's a terrible decision, because everywhere I see, and just the fact that we've grown up with so many games that have been local co-op, you're limiting your market immediately. You're immediately cutting out half the market. I'm going to say half, because there are that many people that want to play with their friends or family or whoever they like to play. But you're immediately cutting out your market to half, okay? I understand they're trying to, there's probably more demand on developing something like that, as well as, but like you said, using up.
I don't think they were hurting demand, because think of it like this. They kept co-op, but it was online co-op. So what that meant was, if you and I wanted to play a campaign together, we each had to own it.
So let me ask you this.
That increases demand then.
It does, but so that might be the new style, right? The new way of playing. I think most people, when they think of cooperative, they think of you sitting right next to me, us playing together.
Well, I mean, that...
And that might be because we're older.
Right.
Because I feel like the new kids now just, I got my own. Like, and they just, online is what they know. But like, for us, which is a good portion of us, I mean, we're used to playing together in the same room.
So we love couch cooperative gameplay.
Right.
But cooperative just means that you and at least one other person are working together through a series of events.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that definition, we still have Halo 5 is a cooperative game, but you have to do it online with somebody else who owns the title.
I don't like that.
Right? And now Microsoft has backtracked and has said that Halo 6 will include local co-op again.
Why do you think they made that decision?
I think they made that decision for two reasons. One, I think people were upset. I think...
Absolutely.
I think a game that... I mean, Halo basically brought the LAN party to consoles.
Right.
Okay? LAN parties existed in the computer world, and yeah, a bunch of us would get together and play GoldenEye, but just with one console.
Right.
Halo was the first time where you could bring four Xboxes together in a room, wire them all together through, you know, a Switch or a router, and get 16 people playing at the same time in the same room. Right. And, you know, you got each team's got a spy trying to screen watch, and you're throwing shit at each other. That was Halo. Halo did that. And Halo took that away in Halo 5. I think that Microsoft realized that people were upset about that, but I also think it's more than that.
Do you think that hurt their sales? Sorry, I just want to get back to the market thing. Your market down.
I don't think it hurt their sales, because it forces more people to buy the game. I don't think there are many people out there who went, oh, it doesn't have local co-op, I'm just not going to play it. I don't think there's a lot of people out there that said that. Now, look, if you're listening out there and you said that, you have to shoot us an email.
I kind of said that.
Go
to
contact@heroespodcast.com.
I'm going to give you an example, and then you can continue your rant.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
Like making Gears of War and going, well, yeah, there's a team of people you're rolling with, but no one can play them. You're just going to play by yourself. That's stupid.
But there are games that do that anyway that never had.
And that's what I want to talk about. Games that should have had it, but that's a little later. That's a little later.
Well, so I think the other reason, though, is that the Xbox One S and the Xbox One X are both a little bit stronger than the initial Xbox One. And developers have had more time with this hardware. They understand it better. And the better you know the hardware you're developing for, the more efficiencies you can find, the more tricks you can learn, the better you can get, and the more tight those games become. Which is why games at the end of a console generation are sometimes even better. Because as those developers have been working with the hardware for years.
Yeah.
Halo 6 will have the advantage that Halo 5 did not have. And because of that, I think from a technical perspective, they'll be able to pull it off. Because on the Scorpio, the X, people are going to want to do 60 frames per second. So they're going to want to do at least 30 frames per second when it's split screen.
Right.
Right? I don't think they could have done that when Halo 5 came out.
Let me ask you this. So this kind of ties into what you're saying. At what point do you think, because it seemed, in my opinion, PlayStation 3, there were select, maybe, I would say probably for PlayStation 3, there was probably select titles. I can probably name 15 or 20, maybe even 30 titles total of the hundreds of games that were produced for PlayStation 3 that were actual local co-op. What point do you think local co-op stopped? And why? I know you're kind of saying,
well, I don't,
the machine capabilities, but the games that had those, what made those different?
I think that it had to do with the birth of online gaming. The idea that we could connect 16, 32, 64, now 100 people in an online match was really alluring to a lot of players and to a lot of developers because it kept people playing those games. You kept getting DLC, you wanted to buy new armor and new weapons. And
Call of Duty had a big part of that.
Right? You started having the map packs. Remember the map packs before DLC was really a thing?
Yep.
That was huge. And I think that it pushed developers to say the campaign is not as important as the online play.
That is definitely the case for a lot of games. In my personal opinion, I think Call of Duty for a while there was on that kick. All of our money is online. It's not, so they were lacking, like Black Ops, they were just lacking in their story because
it wasn't a priority.
They were just like, let you get through this so you can get zombies and you can play it online.
Exactly.
And that's the only reason they wanted you to do that. But
this is changing now because
it's coming back.
It's the premise of marketing a video game has changed from online multiplayer to games as a service. And games as a service is like Destiny. Games as a service is like Overwatch, where you keep a game going for an extended period of time and you add content to it. On a regular basis.
World of Warcraft has been doing that for years.
Yeah, MMOs are a little different. MMOs are kind of in their own category. They've had expansions, of course. So, but
isn't that what Destiny is?
Destiny is not an MMO.
It's played as a first-person shooter, but the premise of it is very MMO-like.
There are a lot of similarities in style, but I still would not categorize it as an MMO.
No, I would not categorize
it. I would consider it an online game.
So,
because I think Destiny is closer. I mean, obviously there's a story and there's raids and things like that, but there's a little more similarity, I think, to the way Overwatch is handled than the way WoW is handled.
See, I think one of the first games that did an online only, I don't know if you had a chance to play this, but it later became free, was the DC Online Universe.
I never played that one.
So I actually bought the game because at first they made it seem like you had to have the game, right?
Yeah.
And later on, months later, they decided that you could download the game. So it wasn't available on download because they didn't want you to have it that way. But anyways, that was like one of the first console games that did that.
Mm-hmm.
And it flopped.
Yeah.
So as soon as they made it free, skyrocketed up all of the player usage.
Free to play is huge. And that's the games as a service model in a way, because you pick a game like League of Legends or Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah.
Where people don't buy the game. They buy the characters. They buy the skins. They buy the mounts. People pay for that kind of stuff. And I think that's the direction everything's going is. Let's build a solid base. And then build on that base for 3 to 5 years. Rather than, let's build a game. And the next year we're going to build a game. And the next year we're going to build a game. Because Call of Duty was basically doing that. Where every other year, a different studio would just put out
they
a
were
Call
just
of
switching.
Duty game. Yeah, they would alternate. So there was a new Call of Duty
and,
every
and
year.
It was clearly obvious which Sledgehammer was much better. It was clearly obvious who was better at it.
Well, and it has to do with why are you putting out the title, right? And the new model is we want you to play our game all the time. Mm-hmm. And if you happen to play something else once in a while, fine. But we want you to come back to our game.
It's just so counterintuitive. How can we like to play your game all the time when you come up with a new one every year?
But that's what's changing, though. That's why Destiny was around for so long, and Destiny 2 will probably be around for longer. And Overwatch is set up the way that it is, and you've got Player Unknown, and there's Anthem that's coming out next year. These games are designed to be games as a service. And games as a service is this whole kind of corporate-y speak term. And for those of you out there who hate, you know, terms like synergize, I hate them too, but we have to use the nomenclature, I'm sorry. But games as a service is the buzz term in all the conferences and all the expos, right? That's what it is. And it follows in line a lot with the model of streaming. Right, you've got Netflix and you've got Hulu and you've got HBO Go, and now you're gonna have CBS All Access, and I think even Boomerang is putting one out of old cartoons and stuff. These are services, and you're paying for the services, right? You're not buying a show, you're not buying a movie. So I think the idea for Destiny 2 is you're not buying the Destiny 2 campaign. You're buying the Destiny 2 universe that will have stuff added to it for probably 5 years, I would say.
So you do think that, I mean, clearly that's a different form of online cooperative play, local co-op, not local co-op, that's just co-op. We're talking local co-op, though, so do you think those type of games, which are still pretty scarce, there's really not that many of them.
They will not have local co-op.
For sure, never, never. But I'm saying those games are still pretty small in numbers. I mean, we're talking 30 maybe on console. Maybe less than that.
But they're the big hitters. They're the AAA titles.
But what I'm saying, though, is like even Call of Duty still has a campaign that you can play cooperative. So local co-op, is that killing local co-op, do you think?
The games as a service?
Absolutely.
Yes. I think anything that drives the gameplay online hurts local gameplay. Because it's designed to not be local, is the whole idea. So every time there's a big title like Destiny that is designed to be an online-only experience, that's one fewer giant AAA title that has local play. So it's going to hurt that. Because these are all giant AAA titles.
It makes me appreciate local co-op more.
Well, sure. Yeah, I agree with that.
Having a this is one of the biggest staples of local co-op, and we can keep going round and round about it, but what if you are in a hotel room without Wi-Fi? You can still play your local co-op. You can't play Destiny.
Well, right, but...
So
I mean,
the biggest staples, is I can play with you right now in this room. We can play the same game. We don't need internet connection.
If we take the Switch out of the conversation for a minute, who's lugging around a home console to a hotel?
I used to do it. You used to do it.
First off, I never did it.
Okay, listen.
You would go
to your friend's house.
The only console I took with me anywhere was my little PS1. That was designed for travel.
Oh my gosh. The smaller one
that you could get the screen for. I did take that
one. Dude, I brought my PlayStation 2 and Xbox everywhere.
You brought your original Xbox?
Everywhere. The big one.
Giant.
I know, the big one.
So you're telling me that you would go grab a launch Xbox One or a PS4 and actually take that on a trip?
Not now, but back in the day I did. But what I'm trying to get at is the appeal to local co-op was that we didn't need an internet connection. We could play the game.
I think for a lot of people, it was the social aspect. And that's something Nintendo has really hit on, is that games are supposed to be social.
Let's talk about it coming back. Do you think there's an increase within the past couple years and soon to come, an increase in local co-op? Not just Switch, but like,
as a whole. Because, you know, you have Gears of War 4, you've got Halo 6 being announced that it will include local co-op. I think that it's still rare, but there's some big name titles that are going to have it.
See, like, one of the biggest titles I think should be local co-op that isn't, Last of Us could easily be local co-op. But the question, though, is, are we hurting the game experience when we do that?
I don't know. Because
that's the major thing they say when everyone is like, what the hell? Why can't you're walking around with a character the whole time and you can't play as them? I mean, Uncharted did that. You were with someone at all times, but you could never do local co-op.
I think that kind of depends, because I think this is the same issue that you're going to see in the Mario Odyssey game. Just because there are two characters doesn't mean there should be two players. I think that in The Last of Us, you played the character that needed to be controlled at a given time. Because you did get to play.
You did switch off.
Yeah. So I think that it just really depends more on...
So that's experience. The experience of the game.
Yes. Yeah. That's the thing. It's the experience of the game. It's the story that's being told. And I think that you have to be careful just coming up with ways for two people to play. I think it was Child of Light, I think, was the indie game that that Ray and I were playing together. And she basically could only control this little light thing on the screen. And
so that's funny.
And I control the main character.
So Resident Evil did that. Basically, did you see the Revelations games for a while there? There was Revelations 2. And there was chapters, right? And I purchased them all. The game was actually phenomenal. I liked it a lot. But you had a side character. And the side characters, you can do local co-op, but the side characters were so useless. So, like, one of the characters was a little girl who can only point out. She had That's abilities. She had abilities, but she could only point out enemies. She couldn't attack them.
Okay.
So, do you think that makes it more challenging? Or do you think that was just, like, well, we did it because we could. Like, it wasn't needed for the game. Because
without playing them, I can't say. I think that if the game is designed around it on purpose, it could be interesting. But if you shoehorn in a second player ability so you can say your game is two player, then you run into some kind of shitty gimmicky gameplay. Right. That's really my concern.
I think it was borderline in that game.
Okay.
Because, like, I enjoyed the single player just fine. Now, if the little girl absolutely sucked as a CPU, and I was like, I need someone to play this girl, that would be a different story. But the gameplay was just fine. So I think that was one of those games where they just threw it in. And they gave her bogus abilities to make up for it.
And that's very likely. I mean, if you think about how you market a game, saying that it's two player will get more people to buy it. Because there are people out there who have siblings or significant others or friends where you're splitting the cost of games and things like that, where if it's not two player, you can't get it.
You didn't buy it. And that's why N64 was such a big deal. Let's talk about Nintendo in general. You talked about the Super Mario Brothers. Nintendo has always... I can think of like a handful of games that weren't cooperative. Local co-op. There are so few of those,
right,
for Nintendo, I'm very happy to see them continue that on forward, and I think that's what's going to lead to the success of the Switch.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there. I just think that it's just going to come down to in the industry what the console hardware can handle.
How's the Switch handling it perfectly fine?
The graphics. It's the graphics. I mean, think about it, man.
It's still 1080p.
It is 1080p, but the textures are not as complex. The animations are not as deep. If you think about a game like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe versus a game like Gears of War 4, Gears of War 4 would not be able to run in split screen mode on a Switch. It just wouldn't be able to. It wouldn't look like the same game.
So Mario Odyssey looks like it might have a little more complex textures.
But Mario Odyssey is not split screen.
Ah, that's right.
And that's something.
That's the trick, right? So that's kind of like a loophole.
It's a bit of a loophole. I mean, there are some
Diablo does it.
Diablo does it. Gauntlet does it. There's some great Rocket League.
Yeah.
No, Rocket League is split. But there are some really great games out there where you're sharing a screen, and it works on all of the platformers. all the Mario platformers that are multiplayer, starting with the Wii versions, where they just zoom in and out depending on how far apart you guys are. That stuff can work really well, but you run into an issue of an experienced player with a less experienced player, or players that don't coordinate well, and it can create a bad experience. So split screen still gives you the freedom of moving around where you want to move around. And if you remember back on Halo Cooperative, if you go far enough where you pass a checkpoint,
teleport.
Exactly. Other player will teleport to you.
Yeah.
Which was kind of a way for the game to not have to load too much.
I agree with it.
Right, if somebody got behind. So we were already cutting corners in cooperative gameplay back in the original Halo game. And I think we've gotten to the point where the Xbox One and PS4 graphics demand so much of the hardware that splitting the screen equals compromises. Because if it's hard to put out the textures at the frame rate and the resolution you want when it's just one of them,
yeah,
and now you've got two of them, right? So think about a game like Gears of War, right? You have a team of four people. So if two of you are playing, there are still two AI people that are in your group. And if you're both watching one of those AI people, the hardware has to produce double of that image doing double of what it's doing.
Can it do it? It can handle
that. That's the question, right? And so I think that we're getting better at that, as you know, the developers are getting better at that, which is why Halo 6 will bring it back. But at the same time, the games as a service model makes it difficult because they're not making any more money off of local co-op. They're making money off of DLC, season packs, map packs, skins, armor, mounts.
What I'm trying to say though is the Switch is the thing is all about co-op, and they're making more money off of that.
Well, but we don't have enough data.
It's the party game. You know what I mean? It's the game we want you to play with other people.
But that's Nintendo. Nintendo has Mario Party, Smash Bros. But it's Mario Kart.
So,
but think about it though. Sony and Microsoft have never made games like that have been successful.
You're right. They have not.
Right. Nintendo, like I said earlier in this podcast, Nintendo, it just does whatever the fuck they want. And people appreciate it because of the IP and the style that Nintendo has.
But are you not saying that you bought Halo 2 because you were able to play with your friends?
I did not buy Halo 2 for that reason. I bought Halo 2 because I loved Halo 1 and I wanted to see the story continue.
And you wanted to play with your brother?
No. I hated playing video games. Okay. My little brother
what I'm
would
saying
chuck
is,
controllers.
Okay. His brother's so. A bad example. I played a lot of games, and a lot of the games I played were so that I could play with my siblings.
But everybody's different,
because
right?
We shared a console.
Sure.
We didn't get
no,
it.
We shared it too. Console. But I wanted the story, and I didn't need somebody else to get the story.
No, but hey, you've got your little brother here.
No.
You guys are playing a story. Maybe in your situation.
When I got together with other people, we played multiplayer.
Right.
We didn't play co-op.
But multiplayer is only fun with three or more.
It depends on the game. Because starting in Halo 2, there was online multiplayer.
Right.
On console. So you could do that as well.
So I think that's a good place to end it.
All right.
We have discovered that the newer systems... Maybe the Xbox X will bring in a new generation of cooperative titles.
Maybe. They have to be careful because everything that comes out for the X has to also be playable in the other Xbox Ones.
It's a huge deal, though. That's a huge deal.
Yeah, so if those can't handle it, then the Scorpio doesn't get it. And that's an important thing for people to remember when you're going out there and you're trying to decide, are you going to upgrade, or if you're buying it for the first time, which one are you going to get? You're not getting different games. You might be getting a higher resolution. You might be getting a higher frame rate sometimes, but you're not getting different games. And you got to remember that. So, but this was episode 25. Thank you guys for joining us. Don't forget to drop us a review on iTunes. We are still doing a contest trying to give away a game.
We are just trying to give you guys a game.
We want to give
you a game. We want the contest to end so that we can give you a game already.
So go out and review us. When we reach 10 reviews on iTunes, we are going to randomly select one of you to win a free game, and we will contact you, and then we will discuss what kind of game you would like, so it's something you actually want to play.
I mean, cooperative. I mean, we can make it happen.
We can make it happen. So hit us up there on iTunes. Go to heroespodcast.com. We've got links there. We're at Heroes Podcast on Facebook and Twitter.
Twitter. Yep.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will catch you next time on episode 26.
Peace out.